Please note, this episode contains conversations about body shaming, body image, and mental health. Please refer to the podcast description for more information.
Welcome to Scottish Ballet's Half Hour Call.
It's a blood stage. Why not coming in?
Escape the backstage commotion and find a quiet moment in the dressing room of Scottish Ballet. In each episode, we'll be joined by special guests for a frank and unfiltered conversation about the world we live in and where a ballet company fits into it. In this episode, we discuss body image in ballet as Scottish Ballet's CEO and Artistic Director, Christopher Hampson, is joined by Scottish Ballet soloist, Grace Horler, and American dancer, influencer and content creator, Catherine Morgan.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your half-hour call to the start of this evening's performance. You have 30 minutes. Your half-hour call, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Half Hour Call, and I'm delighted to have with me today Catherine. Hi Catherine, where are you?
I am currently in Orange County, California.
Fantastic. And it's morning, right?
It is 8 a.m. here, yes.
Perfect. We're in the evening here in Scotland. And Grace, you're sitting where?
I am in Scottish Ballet HQ, so I'm just out of rehearsals to come and chat with you guys.
Thanks. Just next door to me. And I'm in Scottish Ballet as well. We are here to discuss body image. And as dancers, we, I'm sure, collectively have all had thoughts and journeys when it comes to body image. Catherine, you have been publicly championing change in the industry. So do you want to kick us off by telling us how you came about talking about this so prevalently?
Absolutely. I, from a very young age, was never the thinnest one in the room. I was always small and I didn't struggle with it until I started turning into a woman. And then I also was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition when I was 21 and a soloist with New York City Ballet. And so at that time, I like every dancer, I thought it was me. I thought it was my fault. I thought I didn't exercise enough. I ate too much. And so I left the business for a while. I took about a 7-year break, and then I came back and joined Miami City Ballet as a soloist. And from what I had heard just through friends, through people during my gap time off, that the ballet world is getting better. It's getting better. We're changing. It's so much more inclusive. And then I get back to another ballet company and it is far from it. Same problem as before. Roles were taken away from me for my size. I was told I was an embarrassment for my size. And it just was sort of like, okay, we are led to believe that the ballet world is better. We are led to believe that we are being more inclusive. Companies might be hiring different dancers, but they're not actually using them. They're not actually casting them. It's kind of a front. And so once I left Miami, I let 6 months go by. The pandemic hit. And then I decided to speak out because I had already built my own business. I have my own sources of income. I wasn't dependent on a company for my livelihood. And so I thought, well, if I don't speak out, someone who doesn't owe anyone anything and is not at liability to lose their job, there's no, my job is not on the line, then who is going to? I'm the person who should be speaking out. So I did. And I thought, well, let's see what happens. And, there was that moment of, do I do this? Do I not do this? Do I do this? Do I not do this? And once I did, the amount of stories that came out, the amount of dancers that reached out, it was unbelievable to me. Because I think still in the back of my head, there was that slight little voice saying, nope, you ate too much. Nope, you didn't exercise enough. You're the only one. Get it together. But then the amount of people who also spoke out after me, once I did, it was like just an onslaught. And so that's when I thought, okay, this is still a huge problem and we need to talk about it.
That's, Catherine, firstly, I know that it's really brave because in dance, and I could hear that in your testimony just now, in dance, there's not a lot of autonomy for dancers, not in our training and often not even when we're in a company. And so it's fascinating to me that you've articulated that you've needed to essentially make sure that you're not reliant on a ballet company in order to speak your truth. Thank you for doing that. And I'm also encouraged, although, you know, hugely disappointed to know, I'm encouraged that lots of people have been in touch, but it is really disappointing to know that that is still within the industry in such a prevalent way. Is there change happening, or do you feel that it's really too small to notice?
There is change happening in very, very small ways. I think the conversations have started. We're taking the first step. I think it's going to be a very slow process. I think it probably will be a generational process. The next generation of artistic directors coming in, and, you know, unlike you, who's an artistic director who's aware of it, I honestly think that it's going to be this whole situation of changeover. And just once that happens, new start, new person, that's when many, many ballet companies are going to change. Because I think many artistic directors are stuck in their ways simply because that's what they know. They were in that pattern too when they were dancing. And so I think it's going to be a very, very, very slow process. I think steps have been started, conversations have started, but it's very, very small.
And I guess as well with that sense of sluggishness in the change, it shows us that there's probably other parts of the industry that need to change. Before we get into that, Grace, could I invite you, from your perspective, where have you come across this within the industry, whether it's been through, you know, your own training, through your professional life? You know, whereabouts has it shown up either for you or for people that you know?
Actually, when you were talking, Catherine, I was thinking this is actually such a massive thing that it's going to be quite difficult to make the change, because it kind of starts when you're at your local dance school and your teacher goes, "Suck in your stomach. I don't want to see what you had for lunch." And is that the best way, do you think, to be telling someone to engage their stomach muscles? I don't know. And I know it's said, like, you know, very easily and just off the cuff, but these small things add up as you go through. Then maybe you go on to vocational training, and that's where maybe favoritism starts for people who look more like the ideal, I say in quotation marks, because actually, what is the ideal? No one, there's not one person, I don't believe, that can look at themselves and be like, "I'm the ideal body shape." I don't think anyone is. So the fact we're trying to get to that is ridiculous. So favoritism towards people who are, I guess, growing towards the ideal body shape begins, probably in your teenage years, where, you know, you're hitting puberty, you're already very not self-confident. Yeah, it starts so early on. And then, unfortunately, I've had so many friends that through school have been told, "You don't have the right body shape and you're never going to make it as a dancer." And that is so sad, because they've been the most talented people I know, and they would have absolutely flown in a company life, but they never got the chance to make it there because all their hope was shot down so early. So they quit, and it was something they loved doing. They were brilliant at it, but because they weren't the ideal shape, they had to stop. And actually, this is how I know it is changing, because if they were in a company right now, I can only really speak for Scottish Ballet because that's where I am, so that's all I know about right now, is it wouldn't be the issue that it was made to be. Like, they might still feel self-conscious, because we all do, but it wouldn't stop them dancing. I don't understand where this concept of what you look like affects what you can do, how you can move an audience, how you can, like, do extraordinary things. Yeah, it kind of baffles me that we're still stuck in that idea, really.
Grace, I think you raised something, two things actually, that I think we might want to explore in this podcast. One is the idea of our own individuality and who we are, and that that point of difference, that everybody is different. So why try and have an ideal is one subject. And then the other one is gatekeepers, artistic directors, people who are in charge of certain choreographic rights, people who hold trusts and foundations for choreographers or a style, people who are legacy holders is probably the best term, and various other gatekeepers, whether it's teachers in schools, as you've just spoken about, Grace. So I'd like to just look at those two areas, and perhaps we could just start with the individual. Grace, you raised the points around, you know, our vocational training, or that really intense part of our training is often when our bodies are changing the most. I wonder if you both would feel okay to talk about that, whether it's your own experience or something you've seen in others around you.
For me, I probably had one of the most extreme growth spurts. So I went from being the smallest in my class and over 2 years was suddenly the tallest. And that's how I grew. That was sort of my path. And I found that really difficult. People were constantly saying, you're too tall, you're too tall. Like, don't even audition places because you're too tall. And the knock that has on you is kind of undescribable, because in this industry, the only way you're going to really excel is if you back yourself. It's a very individual thing. So at maybe 18, you're going out to different places across the world, hoping to get a job, and you're just on your own. And if you've constantly been fed that you aren't ideal, you're too tall, you're too curvy, you're too this, that, how are you supposed to go into a room and convince the people sitting at the front that you're worthy of a place when you feel out of place? It's so difficult, and it feels so unfair, but it's happening to every dancer. So there's some kind of fairness in the unfairness, unfortunately.
And I think, too, it's a good point, because you are having to get a job younger than most people in other professions. And what I see is, and I know men struggle with it too, but with the women, when they're young and they haven't gone through puberty and they're these like little teeny things, and then, you know, it's like, oh, she looks beautiful. And then nature happens as it's supposed to. Women become women, girls become women, they suddenly develop as they're supposed to. And suddenly it's like, oh no, she's becoming a woman. Oh, this is going to hurt her chances. Oh, she's too curvy. Oh, she's getting a chest. Oh, her hips. And I'm like, this is actually what is supposed to biologically be happening. And yet it's a bad thing in the ballet world. And oh, they all want us to look like these prepubescent teenagers. And it's funny, because sometimes with the men, when they're younger, it's like, oh, they're scrawny. And then they become men, and suddenly it's like, oh, he's become a man. And so it's the opposite for women. And so that is one of the things that's so hard too, is biology works against you. And I think for me, I was a late developer, but my biggest body issues came when I did end up having this autoimmune condition, whereby I just put on weight rapidly, and suddenly my shape looked totally different. And instead of, are you okay? What's happening to you? I got, well, are you aware that you have gained weight? Are you aware that you no longer look like you are taking care of yourself? And it's like, no, I had no clue. No idea, you know? So it's always put on the individual too. It's always that person's fault, rather than saying, hey, is there something happening in your life? Hey, are you going through puberty? You know, it's always the dancer's fault in the ballet world.
Catherine, I hear that you describe that infantilization, particularly of women. It's something I recognize in my own experience. Grace, something similar to you. I was one of the smallest boys, and, you know, a couple of years later was one of the tallest. But where our stories differ is exactly how you described it, Catherine. That was something either celebrated or something that was exciting, that there'd been a change. So I think, again, to your point earlier, Grace, that divergence happens very early on, and it's inbuilt into our training and then into our thinking. I wonder, Do either of you have any examples of the reverse where our body types have been celebrated, where you've maybe worked with a choreographer or a teacher or a coach, or even just had a really great colleague who has been able to do the reverse of what we've been discussing? Have either of you experienced that?
I think for me, my main sticky point in my brain was the height coming out of school. That was what I was a bit hung up on. And I think when I got to this job at Scottish Ballet, I was suddenly surrounded by women of similar heights to me. And it was kind of pushed like, dance to your size, like really use your height and really project as big as you can, which I couldn't believe that. I know that sounds really silly, but because I'd always been told to hide at the back because I was the tallest, you stand shortest to tallest. So I was always at the back of the class and they always used to say, I don't want to see you because you should be in line. So I was very good at hiding, staying in line. No one should ever see me. So for me, coming here and experiencing it being a positive really took me by surprise, which is quite sad, but a good thing. And I just hope that that happens to other dancers too when they leave school and they join a company. They realize there's a bigger picture to what you've been doing in your class of 12.
I've never had a choreographer or director praise the fact that I was different, but I've had a lot of audience members, YouTube viewers, people I work with come up to me and say, thank you. I love that I can see a little bit of myself in you, because when I go to the ballet, I often feel like, you know, these are mythological creatures that I can't even relate to. And when I watch you dance, I see a woman, I see somebody who is not, you know, rail thin. You know, students that I've encouraged, thank you so much. I didn't think I could do this, but I've watched your videos and I want to keep going because I love. That's where I get my feedback, positive feedback from, is not necessarily the professional ballet world, but the audience, the students, the adults who have come back to ballet. And that makes it much more worth it for me.
They're all parts of the ecology, though, actually. So I think that's important. And I think I remember, we'd just been at the Sadler's Wells just a few months ago with Coppelia, and our version of Coppelia have these clones in the last act. It's a very contemporary version. And the choreographers, Jess and Morgs, had a corps de ballet of men and women all dressed exactly the same, pink bob wigs and leotards. And didn't matter what gender you were, that's how we were dressed. And we had really great feedback, just to your point, Catherine, about, you know, I've seen myself there, because what people were seeing was a mass corps de ballet of all different body types. And I really thank Jess and Morgs for that, because that was by design and that was purposeful. It was intentional. So, yeah, I think that's really important. It leads us in a way into that second area I was talking about around gatekeepers, people that, like myself as an artistic director or a choreographer, have within the ballet world the perceived power or the actual power and or both, you know, at any time, to allow people onto a stage, to allow people to experience a particular role, to allow people to access certain choreography. That's where, in my current part of my career, I see some of the challenges from my side. Sometimes there's legacy owners who are indignant about different body types. They're immovable on looking beyond perhaps the body type a certain role was created on. Have either of you had that experience or something similar?
Very much so. I mean, especially with, I don't know if this is just an American thing or if it's the ballet world in general, but I feel like a lot of artistic directors, because they had to experience the same thing the current dancers are experiencing, it's like, well, I had to go through it, so do you. That's how it is. This is how ballet is. This is how it's always been from the beginning of the time, which is not actually true, but that's another conversation. But I think these, they get stuck in the same patterns, and we are all conditioned the same way. And so they had to, as dancers, experience the body shaming, the issues. I have to be small. I have to be this. I have to be that. So it's no different when they become the artistic director, because it's all they know. And I think as dancers, speaking from personal experience, I live and die with what that person in the front of the room thinks of me and what they're going to cast me in and how they view me. And it's really very much they run my whole brain. They run my life just by what one person thinks of me. And so they do have quite a lot of power in that.
Well, I was just thinking as well, when it comes to things like costumes, if you go for a costume fitting and we're doing a ballet that's been done, I don't know, maybe 10 times in the company over the span of maybe 50 years, and we're trying to put on costumes that were the original, so made for people who are very petite, very slim, tiny, and then sometimes you're made to feel like, why don't you fit in this costume? And it's like, I feel like it's the whole ballet group, I'm going to say, everything about it needs to come with us, not just the dancers and not just the artistic. It's everyone needs to travel a bit with us if we're going to make this work. I'm not going to fit in a costume of someone who wore it 50 years ago, because as humans, we've evolved, and the idea of what a ballet dancer is slowly evolving, hence why I can still do this job. So yeah, I don't want to be made to feel bad because I don't fit in it. So it's just all these small things, and also just comments that you hear like in passing, in rehearsals or something. For example, I've overheard, this is way back when, a comment referring to a woman's, oh, her childbearing hips, but it was said in such a horrible way. And I was like, hold on a minute. Yes, they are childbearing hips, because that's what we were made to do. So why are we flipping it around like that's a bad thing? We were literally made to do that.
Yeah. These shorthand comments they're deeply wounding, I would imagine, unhelpful. But, you know, just for, you know, full transparency, I know when I started teaching, when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I was reaching for these levers like really easily. Like I didn't have to think, because it's an easy way, rather than actually, what am I trying to say? What am I trying to communicate? And I know in my time, I've evolved and learned that in order to be as supportive and to get the best out of someone, you just need to think slightly differently. That's all. So, you know, I think change, it may be slow, but I would hope that we can push it. We can maybe perhaps push it faster or push for deeper change if we do involve more people, such as, you know, teachers, coaches, designers, anyone that works within a ballet company that has an interest in our image and what we project. And I wonder where, in a way, with our image and what we project, where does that leave the responsibilities of people like audiences and critics? I was going through some stuff a couple of months ago in my archives at home. And because I'm really old, I found some old reviews from like the 80s, 1980s. I mean, you could not publish those reviews anymore. They are abhorrent in the way they describe dancers, not as Grace. I know you've said this before to me. You're a human first. You know, you've said that before, haven't you? That, you know, but the way the critic, certainly in the 1980s reviews I've got, they're not describing a human or even an artist. It's just an object that's held up to some mythical template in their heads. I wonder if you want to say a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's easy for people to forget that we're just humans. We're not extraordinary. We can sometimes do extraordinary things on a good day, but we have bad days because we are humans. And when people or reviewers comment on how we look, it's It's personal. You're not talking about how I've executed something. You're not talking about my talent. You're just reflecting on what I look like. And I can't do anything about that. I can try, but actually, I don't want to. All I want to do is feel confident, not change how I look.
Catherine, what's your view on in terms of critics and audiences as stakeholders in this conversation?
We had some very tough critics in New York, and I think I saw the damage it did on many dancers. And actually, funnily enough, maybe it was about 15 years ago now, we had one critic call one of our principals. She was doing Sugar Plum and the Nutcracker, and the review was, it looks like she had one sugar plum too many. And I remember it set off a firestorm, and she was on the Today Show, and she was on like, and it's even 15 or 20 years ago now, it started this conversation because I think people realized, okay, wait a minute, this dancer has put in her whole life for her art form, for her job. And that's what you saw in the performance, is that she had one sugar plum too many. And I remember thinking, oh, wow. You know, and then I went on with my life because this was, I was very, very young at the time. But yes, the things that are published about these dancers, it's not about their lifelong work towards this. I mean, the critics kind of disregard the fact that we have, most of us have been working since we were little and got into this job young and gave up things for this job. They just review what they see immediately in front of them and haven't thought about the work put into it. All the, even like we were talking about earlier, the costume department, how long that took, the choreographer's vision. It's just what they see in front of them at that moment and eh, whatever. And it's terrifying, to be honest, that they can write that. That's what they see in their review.
And I think when those sorts of reviews come out, there is no comeback. There never is. That's the contract with the critic. And I think that's particularly cruel in this situation. We were talking about how there's a great deal of change to make. And Grace, you were talking about how even from a very young age, from your first sort of iterations with ballet teachers, there was already things being said that were very unhelpful. Can we speak a little bit about how teachers might need to evolve so that they become supportive and more inclusive?
I think it's just an awareness that, yes, you're training ballet dancers, but you're also raising humans. You have a bigger responsibility to raise a good adult than just what they produce on a stage. And being young, you're like a sponge, you know, you really absorb everything. So whatever you're being told is going to stick with you for life. So if we can just change the way we say things, just be a bit more thoughtful, I think it's going to be way more productive and produce, well, happier and more confident dancers.
I think for me, it's also with ballet teachers. You're also moving the art form forward. You're not just training these humans. You are not just working on creating professional dancers, but not every kid is going to be a professional dancer. And if we damage these kids, you damage the art form, because I have so many friends who took ballet with me way back when and will not even touch it because of the trauma. They will not go see a ballet. They will not go support a ballet. They will certainly not put their kids in ballet. So for all these students you have, that's a future audience member. That's a future parent. That's a future donor. And so if you damage these kids enough, you're going to hurt them and you're going to put trauma on them, but you're also going to put trauma on the art form, because this is how the art form dies. They're not going to want to put their children in ballet. They're not going to want, I can't, there's some of my friends, oh, I can't even go to a ballet. There's just too much there. And so you're actually hurting everything as a whole. You're hurting everybody individually and you're hurting the art form as a whole. And so it's just about how you word things. Like we said earlier, just, you can say support with your core. Don't say suck your stomach in. You know, it's just these little teeny phrases that can make the world a difference, especially to a 6, 7, 8 year old. You know, these are little kids and even teenagers who are going through a very difficult time. Teenage years are very hard. So it's just about being supportive and encouraging and rephrasing.
These are simple and effective changes, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your Act 1 beginner's call. Ladies and gentlemen of the orchestra, would you please make your way to the pit? Your Act 1 beginner's call, please, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
So that announcement brings us to our beginner's call. So this just gives us a chance to reflect on where our conversation has been going, but where it should go next. So I guess the question I'd love to pose to you both is, just imagine ourselves in 10 years' time going to see a ballet, and what would great look like? Catherine?
I think for me, it would be seeing, as simple as this sounds, it's such a difficult thing for the ballet world, but seeing different bodies, seeing different ethnicities, seeing different heights and skin tones, and just seeing a not a cookie cutter company. The corps de ballet does not have to look the same. It's okay. All the snowflakes don't have to look the same. No two snowflakes are alike in real life. So why are we trying to make our corps look identical? And I think it's also, for me, is a feeling that an audience can walk in and not feel ostracized, not feel like, oh, this is very stuffy ballet. You know, I think it has to be a place where people can come in and enjoy without feeling on edge. I think sometimes ballet does feel very elitist, and I think it's making the whole experience much more welcoming.
That does sound great. And what about you, Grace?
I was going to kind of echo what Catherine said. It would be really nice to see representation on stage of normal human bodies, people that you see in the street. I would like to see them on the stage and not, as you said, cardboard cutouts. Also, I'd quite like to see confidence and, yeah, just self-love from dancers in general. So when they've been asked to wear a tiny costume or something they don't feel comfortable in, they feel confident enough to be like, yeah, that's fine, and still put out their best work and not feel so self-conscious that it affects their performance.
Well, the one thing we've all got in common is that we're all different, right? So I think that would be a good place to end up. Catherine, Grace, thanks so much for being so open and honest today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.